Hello and welcome to this webinar on Does Nota Need to Have More Teeth? Nota, of course, means none of the above. My name is Ajit Ranade. I'm a co-founder and trustee of the Association for Democratic Reforms, and I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very distinguished panel which will discuss the topic today. The webinar is structured as follows. We will have each of the panelists making opening remarks for about 10-12 minutes in the beginning, and then we will have a round of discussion, and then we will take questions and comments from the audience. You have a chat box in front of you. Please put in your observations, comments, questions in the chat box. Before we start the discussion today, the webinar, I'd like to take a few minutes to just tell you a little bit about the concept of Nota, none of the above. India, as you know, is the largest democracy in the world, and we aspire it to be the most robustly functioning democracy. And so it's a continuous process of improving our democratic process. And one of the features that has come up that came up in 2004, when there was a demand for the Nota button on the EVM. Can we just have the slide, please? The Nota button, go to the first slide. None of the above, N-O-T-A button was actually asked by, in a PIL in 2004 by the People's Union for Civil Liberties. The idea was to allow voters a chance to reject all the candidates. It na pasanti is a button, as it's called in Marathi, that to express their dissatisfaction with what is on the voter rolls. Next slide, please. This is the Nota button in addition to the candidates. So what is Nota? Nota means none of the above. It is an option on the EVM allowing voters to reject all the contesting candidates who are featured in the ballot as they appear on the EVM. Finally, the 2004 PIL was finally decided by the Supreme Court in a directive in 2013. And that was a landmark judgment. And the court directed the Election Commission of India to provide a Nota button. And the court held it on the basis of a secrecy of ballot was a fundamental right. And that the right to reject was part of the freedom of expression as under the Article 19(1)(a) of the Constitution of India. So it is a symbolic expression of disapproval, but it doesn't have any electoral consequence. And this is something we are going to discuss today. Next slide, please. So 2004 was the PIL, 2013 was the Supreme Court judgment. And then in 2013 itself, a Nota was implemented in the Vidhan Sabha elections in 5 states. And in 2014, it was introduced nationwide in the Lok Sabha elections. Next, please. So now it is used in all the national elections and state elections. There is, as I said, no effect on the outcome. The highest valid candidate still wins. So even if Nota gets more votes than all other candidates, it has no electoral consequence. But the elections to the Rajya Sabha and local body elections have been excluded. And it is seen that its usage has been rising in some parts of India, especially in tribal and conflict zones. But we will come to that in the discussion. Next slide, please. So we have some data now on the usage of Nota. In the 2014 Lok Sabha elections, 1.08% of all the votes cast were in favor of Nota. In 2019, that percentage was 1.04. In 2024, it's about 1%. The total Nota votes cast in 2024 was 6.35 million. In the state assemblies in 2019 in Maharashtra, the percentage went up to 1.4%, and which was substantially higher than 2014. And actually, Nota has polled Nota has not come out to be last. In many, many, many constituencies, Nota got more votes than some of the other marginal candidates in several elections. Next slide, please. The main criticism against Nota has been that it is ineffectual and it's only symbolic. It is no doubt it is a right of the candidate or a right of voters to reject, but this right doesn't have any teeth. It has no effect. So the reform ideas of regarding Nota have been that if Nota wins majority, if Nota gets the highest number of votes, there should be fresh elections. then the election should be countermanded, or it should at least disqualify candidates who have been rejected by nota, and to publish nota share by constituency to put pressure on political parties. The idea is that voters should express some pressure or put some pressure on political parties to put better and better quality candidates. Next slide, please. We have some very, very brief comparison of, is there something like nota in other countries? The evidence we have is that in Russia, until 2006, there was actually a nota, which was a vote against all candidates. It was binding, and a fresh poll had to be organized. But after, it was removed in 2006, this provision. Similarly, in Ukraine, this was there till 2010. Again, a vote against all, right to reject, and the mandatory re-election. But this was again removed in 2010. In the state of Nevada in the United States, we have none of the above kind of a button, but it is symbolic. In the country of Colombia, there is one which is binding and it enforces new elections. In France and Spain, there is a blank vote, which is an expression of the dissatisfaction of the voter, but it has no impact. It is recorded. In Bangladesh and Pakistan, it has been proposed but not implemented. Next slide, please. So this is a concluding slide. We believe that nota empowers the voter with a voter choice, but as of now, it doesn't have any impact. The voting share has remained below 1% so far. Some states have shown meaningful protest, but the debate continues, and today's debate is in that tradition. So with that introduction, I'm delighted. I would like to welcome our first speaker today. The speakers, let me just quickly tell you, the speakers today are Mr. Ashok Lavasa, Ms. Anjali Bharadwaj, Mr. Manu Sebastian, and Mr. Ghanashyam Tiwari. I will introduce the speakers as and when they come to the podium. So let me first welcome Mr. Ashok Lavasa, a distinguished civil servant and a past member of the former member of the Election Commission of India. Very briefly, if I can say that he has served, he's a 1980 Patch IAS officer who served in various capacities, and his home state cadre was Haryana. He was secretary to the Ministry of Civil Aviation, Environment, Forest and Climate Change, and also finance. He retired actually as the Finance Secretary of India. And he served in Election Commission of India, and he importantly oversaw the 2019 general elections. He resigned from the post in August 2020. He was also appointed as Vice President for the Private Sector Operations and Public-Private Partnerships in the Asian Development Bank in Manila after he resigned from the Election Commission. Very importantly, he's also an author. He has written two books that I am aware of. One is called An Ordinary Life, uska Hindi mein bhi hai, Ek Sadharan Si Jindagi, and dusri kitab, of course, is more recent one. I forget the Okar title, which is, of course, his experiences, I think, from the Election Commission. He's a sports enthusiast, an avid reader, a passionate traveler, and a writer, and an eye for photography, a man of course, very distinguished civil servant. So welcome, Mr. Lavasa, and over to you, and request you to restrict your comments to about 12 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ranle, and good evening, everyone. First, let me make one or two corrections. One is that Haryana was not my home cadre. It was my cadre where I served. I belong to Rajasthan. And second is that I have written three books, not two. The last one is called Echoes of Faith, which is co-authored with my wife. And the first one was called An Uncivil Servant, which was published in 2006. So that is about the time when the nota petitions had been filed. And it took 10 years for the decision to come. As Mr. Ranade said, that it was in 2013. Now we are more than a decade that we have experienced nota. And I find that whereas this was a very important reform from the point of view of democracy, from the point of view of allowing people to exercise their choice of not wanting to elect anybody who is on offer. Now we have reached a stage where the votaries of nota feel that it should be more impactful. this was perhaps not the original prayer in the petition. By way of an aside, I also want to mention that we have a representative of one political party, but the political parties, I don't think, have been in the forefront of many electoral reforms in the country, which is actually a pity, because they are the principal players in the game. The principal stakeholders, of course, are the people of this country. But I somehow find it a little ironic that political parties don't come out with any agenda for electoral reforms. NOTA, I think, is one of the electoral reforms which was introduced. It gave people the choice to say that they don't like the candidates who have filed their candidature, expressing their disapproval of the people who offer themselves as candidates. Now, whereas this was the freedom of rejecting everyone, the right to reject everyone is also part of the right to vote. So in that sense, I think it was a very welcome move. I am tempted to think that even now, with India having recorded the highest percentage of votes, which is 67% or thereabouts, we still have about 33% people who don't vote. So can we say that those who don't vote are also rejecting people? I don't think we can say that, because the right to come to the polling booth and actually say that we don't like anyone is a more affirmative, more assertive act than to not come and vote, because your inability to cast your vote could be on account of different reasons. And this is not the occasion to go into that. But clearly, in the first past post system that we follow, even if 99% people or 99.9% people were not to vote and only one person was to vote, or even if there is no contest and there is only one qualified candidate, he or she can get elected. So we have a system in which, because we follow the first past the post system, the volume of people or the number of people who vote actually is not the determining factor in terms of any cutoff. We don't have a benchmark. Now, of course, with the people for 10 years expressing their reservation about candidates, and the figures were given by Mr. Ranade, the next step is that people have started either becoming cynical about NOTA and saying that should this concept be buried altogether? And on the other hand, you have people who are arguing that let this become more impactful. Should it have more teeth? The one word answer to that question, which is the subject of today's discussion, my answer is yes, it should have more teeth. But it deserves a more elaborate response than just to say yes. And I think when you consider NOTA, we need to look at three aspects of this entire business. First is the right, the spirit of democracy. And I think the spirit of democracy is served by allowing people to come and say that we don't like any of the candidates. So that is fine. But the purpose of this is clearly to demand better candidates. And that is where we come to the quality of representation. I think the purpose and the spirit behind the Supreme Court order, and I was reading the judgment, Election Commission also agreed that, yes, they can provide this option and this option should be there. So the spirit of this was, as I said, to allow people to express their choice, negative choice. And the underlying purpose, because which also the Supreme Court sums up in one of the paragraphs, that they expected that this will send a message to the political parties and they will be encouraged to offer better.
Looks like Mr. Lavasa's connection is having some problems. We'll just wait for a couple of minutes for him to come back. We're trying to reach him, but in case there is a problem, I'll request Anjali to be the next speaker just in case. Let's give it a minute. So Anjali, is it okay? I think we should, in the fairness of things and because of time constraints, can we just go with you first, and then when he joins, we'll.
Sure, okay. Sure. Whatever you feel is best.
Yeah, let's do that. So let me introduce you formally. So we'll come back to Mr. Ashok Lavasa when he joins back. But let me welcome our second speaker, Ms. Anjali Bharadwaj. She is a graduate of Lady Shri Ram College and Oxford University. And she is the founder of a citizens organization called Satark Nagrik Sangathan, which is a people's group based in Delhi in 2003. She's been working since 2003 on to build an empowered and vigilant citizenry based on right to information. I know that you've also been working committee members of the national campaign for people's right to information. That eventually led to the RTI, Right to Information Act in 2005. You also became a member of Shruti Fellow Group, SRUTI, in 2005. And one of the landmark initiatives of Satark Nagrik Sangathan was the dissemination of information about the MLA and MP performance report cards, especially in Delhi and Bihar. And the compulsory display of local area development funds utilization in all municipalities as per Section 4 of the RTI Act. You have, of course, been a leading member of the Right to Food campaign and advocate of universalization of PDS and so on. In 2021, Ms. Bharadwaj was recognized by the U.S. State Department as one of the 12 global anti-corruption champions. So over to you, Anjali.
I think Mr. Lavasa has also managed to join back. Ajit, I can go after he's finished. Yeah.
Okay. Please, I just introduced Anjali. So, okay.
I'm sorry. Lavasa. Yeah. I'm sorry. There's a power failure here. So, I've just connected through some other means. So, let me quickly finish whatever I had to say. So, I said that the purpose was to improve the quality of representation. But we have seen that despite several efforts by the Supreme Court in the sense that they introduced the disclosure of financial status of candidates, they introduced the criminal antecedents to be disclosed in a very comprehensive format, they even ask their political parties to publicize this so that this information is widely disseminated. But I don't think an ADR's record itself will show, their analysis shows that the number of candidates with criminal antecedents has actually gone up. So the purpose or the spirit behind suggesting NOTA to nudge the political parties to improve the quality of candidates, I don't think it has served that purpose. And therefore, there is a need to give it more teeth. Now, but in doing all this, we also need to evolve a system which does not make the electoral process dysfunctional. What do I mean by that? I think there are, because we need to ensure that the democratic process of electing representatives actually is able to be performed. And we don't introduce any provision by which there is a stalemate in the system. I think it is time that we widely debate three or four aspects. One, of course, is whether there should be compulsory voting in India. Personally, I don't think that's a very viable option. And I don't think that in a democracy, you should force people to come and vote. So if the compulsory voting option is ruled out, then what is the credence that we can give to NOTA so that it becomes meaningful? For that, I think we should consider whether there should be a minimum threshold for being eligible to be elected. So let's say, should we say that if you get less than 20% of the votes, polled, then you cannot qualify even to be elected, even if you are first past this post system. So whether that threshold should be prescribed, and if NOTA gets more than that threshold or the highest candidate, then should we disqualify all the other candidates and allowing only those people who have crossed that threshold to recontest the second round? Because if you disqualify everybody who has contested in the first round, I don't know whether it will be fair or part of natural justice that just because enough people have not voted for me, should I be disqualified? But it is important to make elections a serious business. So I think considering a threshold to be crossed to be eligible to be elected, and if NOTA trumps that, then I think the election should be held again. The second thing is that there also has to be a comprehensive reform in the political parties, the system of selecting their representatives. In the sense that we know that there is not too much of inner party democracy in the parties themselves. And we don't have the kind of preliminaries or very widely publicized, debated system of identifying candidates who are fielded by the parties. Because if you go through that system, then there is, to that extent, people's involvement in the entire process of offering candidates for elections. That will also improve the participation and acceptability. And therefore, introducing greater inner party democracy, refining the identification of candidates, the system of identifying candidates, and actually making if NOTA becomes the highest vote catcher, then the election should be held again. I think these are some of the important things that we need to consider. But I go back to my original point, and this is my last point, that I think the quality of democracies improve based on civilized behavior of the people and the political parties. I don't think that a reform which is forced by law is actually sustainable in the long run. As I mentioned, that the criminal antecedents, it has not made any difference to the quality of candidates being selected. The financial status disclosure doesn't mean that people like a candidate who is not very wealthy. So I think ultimately the onus lies a lot on the political parties to improve the quality of candidates that they offer. So I'll stop at that. Thank you. Am I audible?
Yes, yes. So can I just, we will, before inviting Anjali Bharadwaj, can I just ask you one question?
Yeah.
It's a quick follow-up question. When you said that we need to strengthen or enforce meaningfully inner party democracy, and we do have one person from a political party here, do you mean a system of primaries?
That's what I was saying, that like you have in some countries where you have primaries and the candidates who want to ultimately be fielded, they come up, they go to the people, more than one candidate is thrown up by a political party, and then they figure out whether there should be, which candidate should be decided. So somebody might say that this is applicable to a presidential form. But I think even for members of parliament who are offered, the party should evolve this kind of a system.
Right, right. So we'll come back to this issue of inner party democracy. So let me now welcome Ms. Anjali Bharadwaj. I've already introduced you. She's a very distinguished civil society and citizen rights activist, and very active in right to information, right to food campaign, and of course, a global anti-corruption champion. Over to you, Anjali.
Thank you very much, Ajit. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, yes, very much.
Yes. So it's a very interesting topic, and I think we are having this discussion today in the backdrop of a lot of questions and concerns being raised even publicly on our election process. And, you know, we've all sort of been engaging with the role of the election commission, how elections are actually happening in our country. And I think somewhere, people in the country are really seized with the need for proper reforms in the election process. And this whole issue of NOTA is also a very important discussion. And therefore, thanks to ADR for organizing this as well. I work on the right to information, like you mentioned, Ajit, and our work flows from Article 19(1)(a) of the Constitution. The Supreme Court of India in many, many judgments has held that the right to information of citizens in the country flows from free speech and expression. Because if people don't have information, then they can't really express themselves or speak in an informed manner. But also, when people have information, it's equally important that they have ways to express themselves. And since voting is a very, very important aspect of the right to expression, NOTA becomes very important, because when I see around me and I get information also through the various affidavits that are filed by candidates before elections, which came as a result of the ADR judgment, and you know, now it's done widely. When we realize that there are only criminals in the fray, or we realize that there's no one who deserves our vote, it's very, very important for us to be able to express ourselves, to have an instrument like NOTA. And therefore, the Supreme Court, when it held that, you know, the NOTA judgment was there, I think it's a very important tool that we have got as citizens. Of course, like has been discussed, is it adequate is something that we still need to work on. And perhaps there's certainly more power and more teeth that need to be given to NOTA. But I'll come to that in a little while. In 2024 elections, I think all of us saw some very concerning trends, which many people noted, took note of, and saw as really a step towards diminishing democracy. And that was the kind of things that happened where, you know, one realized that there were unreasonable rejection of candidates who were trying to stand for elections. So there were many constituencies where the candidature of many candidates from different parties was rejected, and it seemed to be very unreasonable grounds on which they were rejected. Again, after the last date had passed, many people seemed to withdraw their nominations. And there were allegations that in those cases, there were perhaps cases of coercion where, you know, certain candidates were being forced to withdraw. Now, I think, for example, in Indore, there were other constituencies as well where we saw some of this happen. Now, in a situation like that, we saw how results were declared before elections, where we heard that so and so has won uncontested in this election because there was nobody contesting against them. Well, there was nota. So we saw how, despite there being this instrument, this tool, it wasn't even felt that it was necessary to wait for elections to happen, for people to cast their vote and express a right that had been given to them. And, you know, a conclusion and a result was declared beforehand. I think we need to think of some of these things. There are at least two or three things that come to mind. One is that should not the Election Commission of India in these kind of situations have stepped in to see what were the underlying factors? Because even before the situation came to citizens casting their vote to express their desire to say none of the above, everybody had withdrawn and the result was pretty much announced. So I think the Election Commission, perhaps many of us thought, should have actually done an inquiry, a very serious inquiry should have been done, especially where there were allegations of, you know, coercive action, and some people being forced to withdraw. We saw that not happening. Fact-finding should have happened. Civil society perhaps also needs to gear up, because this could become an emerging trend in the coming elections as well, where, you know, we'll have more and more people standing uncontested and then nota not even being given a chance. So I think that this is something that we need to think about, and also there think of what can be our demand vis-a-vis nota. That A, of course, that when somebody is standing uncontested, there should still be elections, and one should see how many people turn up to say none of the above. And then if that happens, then what should be the course of action? Should there not be a disqualification of the only person who's standing if the number of votes for nota is more than what they garnered? So I think that, you know, we need to really start pushing the boundaries of thinking of how we want to make nota effective. And perhaps I'm trying to say that some of these give us an opportunity to also make this, things that people identify with and people sort of start demanding, because this impacts a lot of people. I mean, all the people in those constituencies deserved a chance to say that none of the above, and they were not even given that chance. And then if they had been given a chance, then I think this kind of a public debate is very important, that what should have happened if nota had got more votes than the only person who was standing. Now, I think, you know, one of the big things where we look at instruments like nota to be effective in terms of expression of people is where we have, problems of criminalization of politics. Now, I think as citizens, all of us are very, very troubled by the increasing criminalization. We often discuss how, political parties keep giving, keep giving us candidates who have criminal antecedents, some of them very serious criminal backgrounds. And when nota is a form of expression that we have, people do get a chance to be able to at least express their disagreement, maybe even their disgust at the kind of people who might be put up in a particular constituency. I feel that, again, we need to think of how we need to give nota more teeth. But here I would also like to say that in many situations, one realizes that, just one solution might not be sufficient. So I would say that NOTA is necessary, but might not be sufficient for us to get rid of the kinds of problems that we have, including criminalization. And perhaps a basket of measures is required. One thing, of course, has been, it's something that ADR, National Campaign for People's Right to Information, other groups across the country have been asking for, is greater transparency in the working of political parties. Mr. Lavasa talked about greater inner party democracy. We are also talking about greater accountability of political parties directly to the people of the country. After all, they take such large amounts of public funds. There are tax concessions that all political parties get. There is no reason why political parties, which play such an important role in our democracy, and very often we hear that political parties to logon ke liye hi chalti hain, logon se hi chalti hain, unke chande se hi chalti hain, why they should not be transparent and accountable directly also to the people in a democracy. Of course, the CIC, Central Information Commission's order of 2013 is very relevant here, because the CIC had on an appeal by ADR only, had said that all national political parties, the BJP, Congress, BSP, all the parties have to be submitting themselves to the Right to Information Act. They have to come under the RTI law. They have to give information to people. And I remember that even at that time, there was a debate that took place, which was not just a regressive debate, I would say. There were people from everywhere, including civil society, who were saying that, look, should this not be restricted just to political party funding? How a political party decides their candidates should be something that should not be open to the Right to Information application being filed and so on. But I think many of us very strongly believed that if we have to fight criminalization, if we have to push political parties in a meaningful way to give us better candidates and better choices, then we do need greater transparency. I mean, even in women's rights groups, this is a discussion we have all the time, where, there are parties who will say that stand for women's rights, we will speak against violence against women, those sort of issues come up. But when they distribute tickets, then we see that, repeatedly tickets are being given to people who have these very, very, problematic cases against them, allegations of violence against women and crimes against women. So I think that this is one way by which citizens can themselves step in and demand from political parties and start asking questions that, how did you decide on this candidate? How did you decide on a criminal after saying, or, someone who's accused of these kinds of crimes after saying that you stand for something else? I don't know. Have I run out of time, Ajit? I can come back later.
Maybe another couple of minutes, maybe.
So I think what really is required is for political parties to submit themselves to the Right to Information. Unfortunately, all the political parties are sitting in what we call uncivil disobedience. So we have a CIC order very clearly where they've been asked to come and to appoint public information officers and come under the RTI law. They've just decided on their own that they're not going to comply with the CIC's orders. And of course, it has been challenged now, the order in the courts. Yeah. But it's not like the courts have given any kind of stay on this. Yeah. I think, again, to give NOTA more teeth, we also need to make sure that there is much more information in the public domain. For citizens to really say that I don't want any of these people who are standing for elections. They need more and more information. One, of course, is the kind of affidavits that are there on criminal, financial, and their assets and liabilities, and educational qualifications. But there is perhaps also need for verification. I mean, we now have ministers who, people are trying to find out whether the educational qualifications that they said they have in their affidavits are indeed true or not, and the right to information requests are being stonewalled. So we need a situation where maybe the Election Commission of India thinks of a way now to take forward the Supreme Court judgment and say, look, how do we verify so that people actually know what is the truth and are able to exercise even their nota more meaningfully. Some of the work that we tried to do was to use the Right to Information Act to put out information on how, elected representatives performed and whether they really worked for the people in their constituency. That could, again, be information that should be put out in a very systematic way so that when somebody recontests elections, people can meaningfully choose a nota. And, of course, finally, the issue of fresh elections and disqualifications, Mr. Lavasa already spoke about, and maybe we can talk about in subsequent
Okay.
questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Tanjali. So you've raised many issues. In fact, the two most important issues of electoral reforms about disqualifying criminal candidates from contesting and also the fact that political parties need to be brought under the RTI. That issue is still in limbo because it's in the courts now. So thank you for that. And
Ajit, can I just interject for a second if you don't mind?
Sure.
One is that, the point which I originally made about political parties sitting in defiance of the CIC order. In fact, I wonder what the RTI Act prescribes as a consequence of defiance of the CIC order? Or is it a case of a deficiency in law that people can get away by defying this? So that again speaks of the quality of legislation.
That issue is actually in the courts right now.
No. The issue may be in the courts for enforcement. But if they have violated CIC order, can the CIC do anything about it? So that is my question. The second thing is that on the criminal antecedents, we know that the Supreme Court in 2019 said that not only will you disclose, but you have to also give reasons why you're selecting that candidate in spite of the criminal records against him. And yes, I think political parties have been giving some explanation or the other. Does it make any difference to anyone? That is the question.
No, that... We have actually worked on that, and the spirit of the Supreme Court's directive was not followed at all. If at all, there was some copy-paste kind of general discrepancy, but it's supposed to be on their website, front and center. Why did they choose a particular candidate with serious criminal charges? But we'll come back to these points.